Hey now, we are the Multimedia Men and Women Podcast. This is podcast number 55, and we are doing it remotely from the Angelica Film Center.
It's so what?
Hey now, we're on site.
This is our first remote podcast. I'm with Adam Conway of the Angelica Film Center.
Yes, of.
Dallas and Plano.
Dallas and Plano.
Here two with four.
Gotti Elkon of Celia Can News.
In.
Hi. Paddington Bear is hanging out with me.
There you go. Gwen Reyes of
No Pants. No Pants.
Gwen Reyes is here from WFAA.
I am. Fresh Fiction.
Yeah. I get the two of you mixed up.
It's because we're both girls.
That's true.
Yes.
All girls look alike. And we found out earlier that Susan and I both like the same, pretty much the same dudes and the same girls. So it works out well.
There you go.
Tell us who.
Dan Stevenson and Margot Robbie.
Yep. We'll get to that later. We're also with Andrew Conway.
Yes, you are.
Local filmmaker. And we're also with Susan Kamyov of This Chicks Flicks and Irving Community Television.
Yeah, hey.
And we're here. It is noon on a Thursday. It's been snowing in Dallas. And we all just saw, minus Andrew, the second best Marigold Hotel press screening, which I actually enjoyed. It was charming and sweet.
It was like a warm hug. That's what I said.
A warm hug.
The first one was really cute.
The first one was good. This one, I think, was even better.
I think it was
good. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Richard Gere is in it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who doesn't?
So dreamy, him? Richard Gere.
He's a very handsome old man.
For some reason, I remember Maggie Smith is in it, if you don't remember Maggie
Your first
Smith.
Crush, right?
Yeah, my first crush. She's Professor McGonagall from Harry Potter. But she seems like she's about to die. Like, she just seems like she's been 90s since Sister Act.
Well, and the funny thing is that Maggie Smith doesn't travel much, and there was, like, a whole scene at the beginning of the film where they, where Dev Patel's character and Maggie Smith's character, in case you don't remember from the first movie, they came in together to be business partners to take over the best exotic Marigold Hotel, but now they've been under construction, and they're getting more and more people, and they're almost sold out completely, so they want to buy a new hotel, a new property to help with all of these aging Britons. That want to come to India to have their the best of their twilight years. And so they go to San Diego. And I thought the whole time, I was like, are they really in San Diego? Because I heard Maggie Smith doesn't travel very much. And so that was my whole
thought.
Maybe
they weren't. Not for that.
But then they get together, and the whole journey for this film is whether or not Dev Patel's character is going to be able to secure finances to open this other hotel. And then
The second best
Marigold.
Which is the title.
And it's in San Diego, not in...
No, it's still in India.
Okay.
It's a warm, feel-good movie. It's kind of like Gilmore Girls in the way there's like really nothing at stake, but a little bit. It's just good characters, good feel-good.
Yeah, and it seems to me to be pretty... And realistic in the way where it's like there's nobody... There's, like, no massive disaster. There's, like you said, nothing really at stake except for, like, a small business. But it's all about, like, what you do when you want to have the best life that you possibly can. And what does that mean to everybody? And each person that lives in this hotel has a different definition of, like, living their best life.
I saw Gotti start to tear up during the movie.
I did. I got a little emotional. Pimping out your mother, though. I don't know. That's a little too much. It's
a little too much? Hit close to home?
Well, also...
That's kind of appeals to everybody.
In addition to Richard Gere, you also have Tamsin Gregg from Episodes. She's so good.
She's really good.
Yeah, she was the other new arrival to the hotel.
Oh, okay.
And I want to point out
Teresa.
Teresa.
That's kind of scary when she.
What's his?
Before she gets deeper,
the dad from Shaun's dad. Shaun's dad.
Bill Nighy.
Bill Nighy.
Wife is his wife from Shaun's dad too.
Yes.
That's the same one in this movie.
Shocking.
Old and in the first one.
Yeah. And we also have a Downton Abbey reunion because we have Maggie Smith and Bill Nighy's wife who played Mrs. Crawley.
Pretty sweet.
Crawley.
So I recommend you see that. What about you?
Oh, for sure. I loved it.
It's good. Feel good. Some of us saw the new Will Smith movie last night called Focus, which is a type of con artist movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those con artist movies like Ocean's 11 where all the thieves are likable and you want to be part of their gang.
Yeah, I kind of thought of it like Ocean's 11 but with sports instead of casinos. Because like we have the race, we have race car driving in it, and we have the football. And the Super Bowl, so it's like them, they're these thieves, these con artists that are trying to take advantage of people who come to town.
Yeah, they're taking advantage of regular Joes, yeah. Not just super rich people. Mm-hmm. But it was real sleek and fun, and Will Smith and Margot Robbie were excellent.
They were.
Yeah. I was saying, I liked it because it was a con film, and they didn't have to have some big heist. It was a little bit more, sounds like a, no pun intended, but like it was a little bit more focused on just the characters and their deceiving, I guess. It was just little small stuff they were doing.
And I felt like, just like with Ocean's 11, which was really a self-reflective film entry into looking back at the heist genre, I feel like this one did the same thing, where it was very much calling out, like, oh, well, you know, you're never going to get to do that one big heist where you can go and retire. You're going to have to still work. And, oh, you have to kind of... It teaches you a little... It kind of, like, turns all the ideas that we as film viewers have turned it on the head, and it made it really fun.
And it kind of leaves it open for a little sequel.
I think, sure.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
His team is still in place, you know.
I was ready for the sequel after I watched it.
The lovable Farad, everyone, you know, liked him.
Well, that's a good one, too. Those are the only ones. That Lazarus Effect starts this weekend, too. But
we've, like, there's, like, a lot of other movies coming out, too.
Yeah, tons of others. What other movies started the Angelica?
We're doing What We Do in the Shadows, which is with Jermaine Clement from Fly the Conchords.
Jermaine.
And Taika Waititi, I think is.
So what was that?
Waititi? Waititi?
God bless.
He's also New Zealander.
And they were really great guests on At Midnight a couple weeks ago.
You also got Royce Dobby. He's playing a werewolf.
What else opens?
I can't wait to see this movie.
Red Army. It's a documentary about the Russian hockey team that lost to the American team. Yeah.
We had a screening for that, right?
Yeah.
Yesterday morning.
So it already happened?
But let's move on. Let's move on to our main event. That's the Oscars this year.
Those happen?
You probably have all watched the Oscars. It's supposedly a lot of people.
I only saw the last 45 minutes.
Year.
Our one viewer watched the Oscars?
Yeah. 20 years. Who watched the Oscars here?
All of us.
At some point.
So, first question: How do you think Neil Patrick Harris did? I think he did a great job. Even some things fell flat. Some things really did well. But
I feel like a lot of it fell flat.
It was really hit or miss. The opening was great, though.
But it's not because of him. I think his misses are much more the bit rather than him.
Right.
Like, he still has my attention. He's much better on the Tonys because he can dance. But him coming out with just, you know, underwear, genius. Good. I like him. I think he's great.
I thought the opening number was one of the best opening numbers in a long time.
It visually was amazing. Like, how they did the
projection screen
and all that stuff.
But didn't it kind of flow really slowly and really...
But isn't that more of an issue of...
No, the whole show.
Isn't the show flow of it more an issue of there's too many awards that they're giving out?
Yeah, there's several technical awards you can definitely do with the...
I don't think they need to... I think they should keep the awards, but there were probably half an hour, 40 minutes...
Well, like sound mixing and sound editing, no one really cares.
I don't mind that, but there were several times where they talked about just the Academy, or the President talked, or they talked about the next award shows, like... Ease up, just get to the awards.
Yeah. I like that they show all the awards, because I think the Oscars is one of the few award shows that actually, like, everything that's nominated, they're, you know, at least on the ballot.
But they don't, though, because they have the technical awards before.
But I mean, like, the ones that's, like, on the ballot or something, because, like, I used to do that, too, where I'd be like, wait, where, if you try to go with, like, the Grammys or...
Oh, yeah.
They'll skip.
Grammys have 6,000 awards.
It's just, like, it's annoying.
And then they have to do 5 minutes on each Best Picture nominee. They have to come out and talk about it and show parts of it.
Like, yeah, if you cut that time down, you could do a lot more fun.
People wouldn't get bored or fall asleep.
Because we already know what the Best Picture
are,
you know? Like, you gave us the list.
But I am glad they brought back the musical acts, though. So.
Yeah, I really like that. I really love the performance parts.
They were good. And I will say, before we get into the actual bitching and moaning about who won and who lost, Lady Gaga appeared and she did a Julie Andrews tribute, and it blew my fucking mind.
Well, I don't understand why you're surprised, really, though, because she's been doing a lot of stuff with Tony Bennett.
Yeah,
like, she was excellent.
Well, she said she trained for like 6 months with a vocal coach to be able to hit those ranges.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have never heard anything like that come out of Lady Gaga's mouth. Yeah. But I'm a big Lady Gaga fan.
See,
and
I'm
I was,
not,
like
but
I
now she shows that she has so much talent, and I feel like she wasted.
And I think what I think what's interesting.
Well, because she has to be her persona.
Well, and I think what's also interesting is with Lady Gaga, what she's been doing is she has a great voice and she's a really good songwriter, but she had been relying so heavily on sort of like manipulations of her voice through digital. Production, and this way it's like she had to strip all of that away and only have her own voice. I think that's why it was so surprising, because we had never heard, even though we've probably heard her sing that way, we've never heard her sing that way.
I mean, that was probably the first, like, in that big of a broadcaster, but if you actually, like, YouTube some of her, just her on the piano, or you go to her show, she does sound like that, and it's not that surprising, but I mean, I was still blown away, and I
So was Julie Andrews. She was really blown away, too.
That was my, like, tear-up moment in the Oscars.
My tear-up moment was definitely Robin Williams, I'm sure.
Oh, that was sad.
Well, I thought, that was weird also that, like, Jennifer Hudson sang after the In Memoriam and not during it, which is a little weird.
Well, they did that last year. Bette Midler came and sang.
But she was singing, I thought she was singing during.
No, it was after.
Moment of silence, dog. Let's move on to the Oscars. Let's start with actor and supporting role. Do we all agree J.K. Simmons deserved it?
Yes. I don't feel like there was anybody else better this year.
Now, if they'd gotten Steve Carell correctly in his correct category, that would have been a competition.
The only one I thought viable for this Best Supporting Actor was Edward Norton.
But
I'm glad
not
that
on
J.K.
the same
Simmons
level.
He was so good.
But if Steve Carell was in there.
Everyone feels bad for Channing Tatum, but he got that Lego Oscar, so...
Yeah, I was going to say, he wins out. He got that Lego Oscar. I don't know, J.K. Simmons in Whiplash, I mean, we're all huge fans of that movie in this room, and so seeing him win was kind of, like, a big win for that film, just because we wanted it to do so well, and then we finally... It's kind of like when...
it won most of its awards.
Christopher Plummer won for The Beginners, which is one of my favorite movies that year. I was really excited about that.
Which because no one else saw it, too. Like, not a lot of people saw Whiplash, so I'm glad that it got... Same thing with Beginners. No one saw Beginners,
and
it was great.
It came out on Blu-ray this week, so feel free to pick it up.
Check it out. It's a great film.
Own it. I'm very happy. Costume design. Grand Budapest.
That's what you're happy about?
Oh, my God. Did you win your Oscar pool over
Grand Budapest won, like, three or four Oscars.
It should have won one more.
It should have won.
It got robbed of a few.
There's one that specifically...
The one thing that the Grand Budapest did win for that I was pissed off at was the hair and makeup, which was only for Tilda Swinton's.
Oh, yeah.
That should have been Guardians of Galaxy. How did that not get makeup?
I totally agree.
Also, how did Interstellar win visual effects and not Dawn of the Planet of the Apes or Guardians of the Galaxy?
That was another
That
one.
Was one of mine. I was like,
they felt sorry for Christopher Nolan.
Visual effects
on that one were really good, though.
But, not as good.
But he does lots of practical stuff.
But how much of it is politics? Like,
oh, it's
because
politics.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes looked incredible. Interstellar it didn't live up to any of what people thought it was going to be.
So who here saw the foreign film Ida?
That was my number one film of the year.
That was. Are you excited that one?
Glad. I was scared that the
Leviathan
was going to win, because I like Leviathan. It's a good, crazy Russian film, but that's.
It's so beautifully shot, though.
It's
so,
amazing.
Yeah.
Shot in white.
Black and white.
Black and white, and it's one of the best Holocaust films you'll ever see that don't really delve into too much of the Holocaust. Pretty amazing.
And it won two awards, right? It won the foreign film, and won... What else? It won screenplay or something?
No.
Just
the foreign film. Just
that. Which is interesting that they don't allow foreign documentaries.
It was not made for cinematography.
But it didn't win.
Birdman won.
Which, that's okay.
Oh, yeah.
I don't mind Chivo winning another award because he does things no one else can do.
So, Best Supporting Actress, Patricia Arquette, did win. I totally feel that. I don't think that's fair. I think Laura Dern did such a better job.
Emma Stone.
Emma Stone.
You know, what's funny is that I really loved Boyhood, and I saw it after I saw Wild and after I saw Birdman, but I really, really loved it, and I was like... Patricia Arquette, you know, she's good. She carries that movie. I mean, I think that she's really getting a lot of accolades, really, just because she was brave enough to age on screen. But I kind of agree with Adam. I would have loved to see an upset of Emma Stone coming out of nowhere, because I thought that I just think...
An upset? Do you really think that...
Patricia
won every award.
She's
Patricia was
winning.
Yeah.
It was a heavy
it would have. It would have been a shocker, because she probably had her speech ready, and, like, that would have...
I saw all of
I mean, she won every other award.
I thought Laura Dern
I thought Laura Dern did too.
Laura Dern was great and wild.
She is really good.
She is. And yeah, she definitely was the emotional center of that movie.
That was a hard category, I felt. I felt like there was a lot of really great performances in there.
Boyhood didn't have a script, right?
Yeah, kind of.
He would write it once they were on set. He would tweet.
It would be scenes. Yeah.
But it wasn't a full script.
So I think like that even gives a... Patricia Arquette more credit, because she did an amazing job in that film, and I think she was, like, she stands out as the best actress in that movie.
And her character's the only one that has to stay together. Like,
yeah.
Ethan Hawke's character is a vagabond. He can do whatever he wants, basically. He's just Ethan. Like, he'll just show up. Her character has to have an emotional change, and she's the only one that goes through, like, real struggle and abuse of husband.
Right.
What does the kid go through? Nothing.
She shows the most emotion.
I mean, the kid's the worst actor of the bunch.
Well, he wasn't an actor, really, when he started.
That's why, you can see.
You know, that's a really good point.
Well, also, yeah, his daughter was not...
No,
well, she's not...
Well,
well, no, she was, like, the worst.
But she was... Her character's meant to be kind of the antagonist to him in the beginning. I think we just like her because she's kind of a little mean brat.
But, you know, you make a really good point about Patricia Arquette in that she does have such an emotional growth that she has to go through. And to be able to do that without knowing exactly... where you're going from where you started, it is a pretty... And, you know, it's so so unconventional that we have a film that's actually essentially filmed linear, filmed in order.
And can you imagine having to be that actress, like, every year, for 12 years, like, just kind of remembering that character and still picking up where you left off and just... Yeah. I don't know. I think she really deserves it.
And since Boyhood kind of got snubbed on everything else, let's give them some award, because that movie is much more brilliant than not... I kind of think he got a little robbed by Best Director.
Totally got robbed.
As much as, like, I want to have... I liked the whole theme to the night. I was a little questioning of that. Like, he totally was Best Director.
Mm-hmm. Who?
Richard Linklater.
I mean, it would have been awesome to have him win, but I don't think he would.
It's, you're putting 12 years of your life into a film. Like, how is that not...
Yeah.
How can you not pay that
and
off?
It and it worked.
It worked.
Because
it could have been shitty.
Yeah.
That kid could have not had anything... And the story could have bombed, and he could have just not had a movie. But he kept his producers and investors in the entire time. Who can do that? No other director can do that.
But does that like, really, does he deserve an award for being able to be a good project manager? Or is it because his final product is actually really, really
well,
good?
Well, if you go with that, then Alejandro has to give his award to Chivo, because that movie is all about the cinematography. It's not about the director. It's... That's the best cinematographer in the world. That guy does crazier shit. He's the reason why Gravity won. He did Children of the Men. He is, let's say it, better than possibly his directors. I think if you're looking at project management, Richard Linklater over 12 years is much more impressive than Alejandro doing this film. Now, what he's doing now with Leo DiCaprio, that sounds like a really cool film.
Well, and I completely agree. I feel like Richard really should have won. Like, there's like a whole mix-up and we can get there, but... Richard should have won for Best Director, in my opinion, just based on the final product. And I feel like Birdman should have, you know, still won for Best Picture.
Even Wes Anderson, maybe?
I would have been happy with Wes Anderson winning for Best Screenplay. But we'll get there.
Alejandro, though, planning out a lot of those scenes are hard, though, because it's been
really
long
hard.
Chunks of scenes. So figuring out all that stuff, it was, you know, the director has a hand in choosing the shots and working with the cinematographer and also working with the actors to sort of plan out all that stuff. So there's a lot of stuff that's involved in it.
Yeah.
And it's very... it's something that not a lot of people do, because doing long takes like that, it's hard to keep your interest. And they were able to do it and keep... it was just crazy, man, the way that they were able to pull that off. And I like Linklater. I think that he did a great job with the fact that, you know, having to work with these people and bring them back to the character over the years. But... I feel like, technically, it was a lot harder to do something like that in Birdman than it is in Boyhood.
It was an interesting... You know, we'll get there. I'll give my thought for
the
director.
The Patricia Arquette speech, do you think, when she talked about women's wages, do you think that's inappropriate?
Sure,
why not? She's
sure.
on the biggest stage
Absolutely.
Imaginable, so...
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they're giving you a podium. They're asking for it.
They're asking
and you know
it.
What? Yeah. I didn't think... If someone doesn't do it, then I kind of think it's... there's no reason to have that. Like, I appreciated her moment. I appreciated the Imitation Game writers. I thought that was amazing.
Also, he's not gay, by the way.
It doesn't matter. His point is so much bigger if he isn't gay.
Yeah,
he's probably like pansexual.
So do you think Ethan Hawke got paid more than
Patricia Arquette has been on like a TV show for like nine years. So now she has a new one.
Now she has CSI Cyber. So well,
if you look at we could still go back to things to the Sony hack, but we could still go back to American Hustle and seeing that Bradley Cooper and Christian Bale got paid what 4 times as much as Amy Adams and Jennifer Lawrence, and the response back to that was, well, they should learn how to negotiate. But there's a lot of repercussions for women who try to negotiate shit. They'll not get hired. They'll bring in somebody else.
But aren't all these people represented by like the same two agencies basically?
Yeah, but those agencies are broken up into so many big time agents that broke their own deals and have their own
connections.
It's not one company that owns the system. It's one company with a bunch of good salespeople. Yeah. And sadly, the best salespeople are men. And the fact that we've only had one $20 million woman, Julia Roberts, but we've had, 30 men? When you're talking about Jennifer Lawrence, who could bankroll...
We have more than this one. Kristen Stewart was making that much for Twilight, and Jennifer Lawrence making that much for Hunger Games.
But that's not with their full salary on points after. Like, if those films had failed, they wouldn't have made the $20 million. She got a check at the beginning to make $20 million, just like Tom Hanks does whenever he decides to do a film.
Well, like, studios are actually getting away from that now, though. They're like, not giving upfront money as much.
It doesn't mean that the women shouldn't get paid. It doesn't mean
that's what I'm saying.
That's been an issue forever, though. You know,
so why not change it?
Yeah, Hollywood.
It's not feminism. It makes sense. These women are making money.
The good old classic
like money. Men sell the movie more than women. And
Jennifer Lawrence sells an entire
billion-dollar industry on her own. Paul Feig has been trying to prove that with his films, like Crystal Wig and those people. And there's been like a whole new resurgence of like female-oriented movies that have been proving the Hollywood system wrong. And so there's starting to be a change in how it works, but it's something that they've lived by for so long.
But the change is negative. The change is Hollywood is lying and saying that they need to cut back. They're making more money than they ever have. So how can you sit there and say they're scaling back? They don't need to scale back. I'm not saying give every single actress $20 million. I'm saying when you have a franchise that's bankrolled by a single individual, and that's her power, that's her presence, should she not get more points than a director who no one has ever heard of and they replace with every movie? Do you know who the director of The Hunger Games is?
No.
Francis Lawrence.
Well, was he the first one?
She was on Proven. She was on
Proven. He was.
Carrie Ross.
Is that bigger than Jennifer Lawrence?
At that time.
Yeah, she was an improving actress at the time.
She was the first one.
The first one did good, so they paid her off into these ones that came afterwards.
I think a really good example too is Melissa McCarthy, who has struggled to make as much money as her male counterparts, and she is one of the most proven comedic actresses working or actors working.
Yeah.
Like she is one. I think Forbes did a piece on her last year, where said everything she touches makes $100 million, and she's still only making like a fraction of what any of the men that working in her films are doing. And I think that Patricia Arquette had a really great point, and I think Andrew has a really good point that it's going to take time, but it's also one of those things that's really shitty that like Will Smith, who had years of bombs, was still getting $20 million a picture, whereas if Melissa McCarthy finally got $20 million, and then, or Reese Witherspoon's a good example, because she was making $20 million, and she had, like, two bombs or one bomb, and they were like, nope, you get $10 million now. And that's, like, that's an unfortunate thing.
And one thing, too, is Hollywood's kind of realized, too, that star power is not what it used to be anymore, because then you have movies coming out that are making all this money with no stars in it.
Yeah,
and so they're starting to reevaluate how they think about that. Like, if you know, paying someone that much up front, it's not worth it to them anymore. So what Adam said earlier is they're going in and they're giving them less up front and with a guarantee on back-end profits if the movie's successful. It's sort of covering their asses a little more because, it's Hollywood's become too expensive for all these blockbusters. You know, they're spending way too much. And if they don't get back what they want, then it's screwed. Like, look at, like, Hot Tub Time Machine and stuff like that, where, Hot Tub Time Machine 2, where, unfortunately, it didn't live up to the original. And we have bombs like that all the time. Mordecai, you can list off the movies that they've paid way too much for that they're never going to see the money back. And so...
Well, Johnny Depp hasn't had a good movie in forever, though.
Right.
Will Johnny Depp make money in... though, with his next contract?
He's going to make...
So shut up about the bullshit.
Well, he's going to make...
I mean, fact is, the guy has bombed for what?
He'll make $100 million off the films, next
and he'll get paid next time.
Those movies make a billion.
Reese Witherspoon,
$30 million,
will never make $20 million again unless she wins maybe an Oscar. And she could have with Wild or something major.
Or if
she's
she
in a new comedy with Sophia Vergara.
Or if she continues to, she'll make her $20 million, but she may not make it as an actress. She'll make it as a producer.
As a producer,
because she's done. She did Gone Girl, and then she owns all of Gillian Flynn's movies.
Yeah.
She bought the rights to all
of
them.
So she's smart. She figured her own way around the system, and so that's the thing.
But the argument isn't, can we help find people to find the way around? The argument is, don't you kind of want to break the glass and have someone finally say, why aren't you paying people correctly? Why aren't you having a correct system? Like, this is a big enough multi-billion dollar industry where they could be a little bit better in their finances. They're stupid with money.
Hollywood is our number one export.
Yeah.
It's the thing that keeps America relevant in the rest of the world. So.
And now Hollywood's focused on China because China's become a bigger market than the U.S.
And... Shades of Grey did amazing in China. You're welcome.
So, they did?
I thought they did.
So did Kingsman.
So did Kingsman.
Kingsman did.
Great.
All right,
what's our next one?
Moving on, sorry.
What's our next hot topic?
Tangents.
Animated short film and film. We're all excited that Feast.
Yes.
Winston.
Well, that was surprising that Big Hair 6 won, though, because
House
of Dragon 2
was
the front runner.
I like Big Hair 6.
Well, I like Big Hair 6 too.
That was in my top 10.
I
loved it.
But I'm saying it was surprising.
I was surprised. I missed most of the Oscars because I had to have dinner with my family, and so I came in the last 45 minutes. So I had no idea who won Best Animated Feature, and I was like, I'm living in this world where How to Train Your Dragon won, and then I found out that it was Big Hero 6. And I was like, really? I loved Big Hero 6. I was really excited about it, but I really thought it was going to be How to Train Your Dragon. Should have been.
So
Lego
you
movie.
Felt that that was better than Big Hero 6?
I did just because I feel like the story in How to Train Your Dragon is a little bit more touching than Big Hero 6.
And animation
sequels are hard, though.
Sequels are very hard.
A lot of times sequels never win.
And especially with this sequel being an open-ended sequel, not as much as, like, if it had been a standalone film by itself, I think that would have been fine. But since it is one of the ones that's like, wait till 2017 to see the result of Hiccup's life.
So I feel like emotionally, Big Hero 6 had a lot more emotional draw than Big.
Would this have won if Lego was in it?
I don't think Lego would have won.
I don't think Lego would have won.
I think
that's really sad.
Chance.
There's no way the Academy would
have
won.
Yeah, I think.
Should it have won?
Yeah.
It won the BAFTA.
Sure.
I thought it hands down should have won.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as I love Big Hero 6, Lego is innovative.
Lego
is
a big risk, and you know,
it
yields
paid
off.
A big reward. Yeah,
it paid
yeah.
off, but you know, the problem is the Oscars don't.
Yeah, and it came out
like
the
that.
First of last year. Too,
so people, I completely forgot it came out last year.
Yeah,
and it was a movie I loved.
We had our.
We did. We had
so
our.
Crazy.
We had a cute kid sitting behind. Brian and I sat next to each other in that movie, and we had a cute kid sitting behind us. That in the middle, dead silent scene, he just goes, "This movie's crazy," and we were like, "Yep,
we
accurate."
But we're excited. Go see the short movie Feast about the little puppy dog.
It's on the Big Hero 6 Blu-ray. So.
Yeah, it came out this week.
Yeah.
I watched that short again after it won and I started bawling.
Aww, his name is I did.
So
his name is Winston.
So good.
Which was my dog's name.
All right. Cinematography, Birdman. Everybody agrees.
Yes,
yeah,
he's good.
He's good. All right.
One thing I do want to say is I'm glad he won for this. Like, I still don't think he should have won for Gravity.
Agree.
Gravity was all. It's all
digital.
It's all digital.
He made that.
Children of the Men. What he did in Children of the Men.
Yeah,
planning that out.
Should have won for them, yeah. So I'm. You know, he's redeemed himself in my eyes. Like, I'm like, I was a little mad at the Academy for giving him.
Were there any first? I don't know if you know this off the top of your head, but were there any first-time nominees in cinematography?
No.
I was going to say cinematography.
Grand Budapest, Ida, Mr. Turner, and Unbroken were the ones that were nominated.
But I don't.
No, Unbroken was Deacon.
Everyone was hoping they were going to give it to him.
What about Mr. Turner though?
For Skyfall last
year. I feel like that's an interesting thing though with cinematography. It's like they almost don't know any more than the five. People they constantly nominate.
Well, Ida, though, is a new person.
Was he a new person?
But it was because it was black and white.
Ida,
I think it was a gimmick why they thought,
that,
okay.
That was a new person.
But I agree with you. Selma got a lot of snubs, and whether you agree whether Selma should have been nominated like for Best Director or not, the thing it really got snubbed for was cinematography. And that's a young cinematographer that certainly they haven't heard of, Bradford Young, who also, in the same year, did A Most Violent Year. So you're talking about two completely different films, different time periods, same kid, and he didn't get a single nomination. It does show that they're old white people that don't actually know what they're talking about when they're looking at film, and it's kind of sad.
But well, wouldn't you prefer him to be nominated for Most Violent Year, though, over Selma?
Yes, but I would like a nomination for the kid over Deakins maybe making one of his more corny films, because he rehashed a lot of those epic moments that we felt. Deakins for Prisoners was 100 times better. Those trees were better than anything I ever saw in Unbroken. And Unbroken wasn't worthy of a nomination.
Or even Nightcrawler. Nightcrawler wasn't nominated in that movie. It's stunning. The stuff that the camera was able to capture. Nightcrawler, I just watched it the other day, and I didn't care for it as much as I wanted to.
The Gilroy brothers?
But
Susan had the best comment, though, about Nightcrawler. It got robbed of the biggest award.
Of actor.
Highway robbery.
The fact that he didn't get nominated is just crazy to me.
And Bradley Cooper did.
We'll get to that later, because I definitely have stuff to say on that. Let's move on to one that I'm real excited about. Best editing. I'm so glad Whiplash won.
Me too.
When Whiplash won Best Editing, I'm like, yes, they finally got it right.
Mm-hmm. That last scene.
I feel like we all saw that together. We're all like, damn, editing on that movie will win.
And I didn't think it was going to. I thought it was good. But I'm so happy.
Yeah, I was surprised that Birdman didn't win for Best Editing.
Editing and one
seven. Well, there was no real editing in
there was, because they had to make the, even though it was long takes, they had to still, you know, piece them together. And
there was only four edits in there.
But I agree, I liked that Whiplash one. I was very excited about that.
Oh my god.
That was so awesome. Good.
Are you excited that Grand Budapest Hotel won the original score? That's pretty awesome.
For
I would have preferred Desplat would have won for Imitation Game.
I thought Imitation Game sounded so much
better. Agree and disagree. And I was also surprised that he was able to win having splitted the vote. Because here's the thing I loved about Alexander Desplat's score for Imitation Game is that it was so...
Sorry.
It was so clean sounding. Like, it was so rich and intense. And
answer it, Adam.
Just answer your phone.
How do you keep making that noise?
Where's that coming from?
It's coming from my stomach. I'm really hungry.
Say hello.
We have a phone call. It's the
it's Alexander.
So I turned it off. Benedict Cumberbatch from the Imitation Game calling in about.
Did you guys see John Travolta behind me?
So it was like with his Imitation Game score. It is beautiful and would have just been as rightfully deserved if he had won for that. But then again, with Grand Budapest, it's so whimsical. And it just depended on your mood of, like, do you want whimsy or do you want something richer and more complex? Because that score was so complex, the Imitation Game one.
Yeah.
I didn't dislike that he won for it. I just personally liked Imitation Game.
I also really liked the Interstellar score, but...
I didn't like it because it was bothering me. I couldn't hear the people talk. I was like, lower that score.
I hated that.
I was saying the same problem.
Boy, you
guys,
can hate
can
the movie,
just,
but...
Can we now admit that none of us liked, except for this one over here, Interstellar?
It was okay. I can't say I hated it.
Say that again?
I was saying that is it time that we can talk about how we didn't like Interstellar? Has there been enough time?
Better or worse than Dark Rises?
No, you guys are on the Interstellar team.
I saw it twice. I didn't say I'm on the team.
First time.
Okay.
I liked it the first time, but I didn't remember any of it.
I liked Interstellar.
I don't want to watch it again.
And did I see that movie twice? I almost feel like I saw that movie twice.
Oh, well, I had to. Well,
so boring.
First time I watched it.
All right, let's move on to original screenplay.
I told you that story.
Birdman.
This is where it pissed me
robbery.
Off.
Robbery?
Yeah, it should have been. I feel like it should have been Grand Budapest. 100%.
I agree.
This is Wes Anderson's most adult film.
And it's also his, if you look at it, and it's his most fantastical, because it's the first time he's actually stepped foot, except for, I mean, maybe a little bit with Fantastic Mr. Fox, where he stepped out of his, like, make-believe, his comfort zone, and did something so challenging and something that was really... a masterpiece story, and it should have won for best screenplay.
And is Birdman that great of a script? It's a theater production. It's a Raymond Carver. Like, it's not that great of a script. I don't get how honestly got nominated.
I'm so surprised.
I don't know. There's some vignettes in there. Like, this whole scene with, like, Edward Norton and Emma Stone on the roof was amazing. And all the scenes with Michael Keaton and Edward Norton together were... I loved all that stuff. Like, where they're like, sort of, like, sizing each other up when they first meet. And then the whole scene, like, with Edward Norton in the
bed. But isn't that more
of... Emma Stone, yeah. Like...
Do you think that's a performance thing versus...
Performance.
What? I'm sure... No. I'm sure all that was on the... page.
Like, Budapest didn't
have
a dull moment.
It had to be that, kind out or something like that. The script has got to be.
Budapest's script is so tight. It went from scene to scene. It was so great.
Throw a cat out the window. Sold me right there. Yeah. Threw a cat out the window.
And then he checks it in the coat check.
Yeah. That's perfect.
It's genius, right?
While I'm okay with Birdman Lee, I do think that Grand Budapest should have won. And I would have loved to see Nightcrawler win, but I didn't have what Grand Budapest did.
I don't like this script.
One thing I do like about Grand Budapest is the fact that it did win a lot of awards, and so that's taken away that whole stipulation, like, oh, it came out in the beginning of the year. There's no way the Oscars are going to even recognize
it. It won a lot of awards.
It won a lot of awards. And so people did forget about it. So, like, people can't use that excuse anymore, I don't think. They can't.
But
it came out earlier in the year, so that, just, you know.
But it didn't win the awards that, honestly, it kind of deserved.
It should have, yeah.
Yeah, like, if you're going to really honor this.
Did it win production design?
Oh, yeah.
It did.
That's definitely
script is important to what
script is really
what he's been doing for so long.
And that's like a hard
so
script to write because like Oh Brother Where Art Thou, that's hard dialogue to write. But like this as well, like that just the dialogue.
And the self reflectiveness of it's like a story within a story within a story. I mean it's like Wes Anderson's Inception.
Yeah.
I would love to see the shooting script for like Birdman to see like if it is as detailed as Wes Anderson's, because I feel like it had to be
out of the blue. That's
while
awesome.
We're at the Angelica.
Adam just pulled out.
Give me a few hours.
Andrew just.
Wes Anderson hasn't even. That could have been his first Oscar.
It would have been. Yeah, he hasn't won. I always get Wes Anderson and Spike Jonze confused sometimes, guys. So I was like, doesn't Wes Anderson have one? And then I was like, oh, right. Because he
has a similar style.
One's a little bit better than the other. Because
what?
Though.
Didn't he win for Her last year?
Yeah.
Spike Jonze?
Well, not director.
No, screenplay.
Screenplay. Which was a good one.
Very, worthy.
All right. Let's talk about adapted screenplay.
Shall we?
Hands down, it's such a good script.
Really, you don't think Whiplash or Theory of Everything?
No. Ew.
I hate Theory of Everything.
Well, I don't know why Inherent Vice.
I actually got to read excerpts from each of these scripts because Vulture was doing their script thing beforehand, and I loved the script for Imitation Game. It was gorgeous.
It's such a good. It won the Blacklist last year too.
Such a good script.
It was blown away by every other script.
Because the scene I read was the scene. Between when Keira Knightley's character comes back and sees Alan Turing after all the years, and he's had the chemical castration, and he's and just having just seen that having just seen the performance, and then reading what was scripted, it's almost exactly the same, and it was just so beautiful. So I was pretty happy. And then he has such a nice speech.
That speech was the best speech, honestly. I would have been fine with Whiplash winning. I think I wanted Whiplash to win, but it was worth it to see Graham Moore win.
What about Gone Girl not even getting nominated?
That should have been nominated.
But the book was still much better.
Yeah.
Like the Inherent Vice, the book is 100 times better than that damn movie. And y'all know how much I love that. Wanted to love that movie.
I wanted it to be the winner.
It was
going to be the best.
And that movie
winner.
Was nothing like the book.
Unfortunately, it fell flat.
I think Imitation Game makes sense because it did capture the book so wonderfully. And I think Whiplash, it's such an interesting script. Like it's so visually. I wouldn't have minded it winning either, but Imitation Game is great.
There was a lot of controversy though with the last 10 minutes of the film. People had issues with them so forcibly trying to.
I hated that.
I didn't like that.
Well, that whole title card thing.
The whole title card at the end.
If they could just left it out, and been way better.
If they had just left out, they would have been totally fine doing. He ended up killing himself. This was really sad, but because of that, we have computers, and we were able to solve. We were able to stop the war.
But then,
that would have been great.
But then, does this speech occur?
That would have been fine. That would have been totally fine because that was still. I'm not saying that they shouldn't have taken out the part about him killing himself. My problem was always with all of a sudden this movie became this message for gays in that time period. And I'm like, that was never talked about in this entire film.
It made you think it was going to do about something else.
No, but that's not about the book, though. That's about that's never been in the story of the film that we had just watched.
So should it have won an Oscar? Because it's like the book is about the fact that he had to like his real struggle was
but
not
you saw that struggle. So
someone not at all.
I feel like they showed more of his struggle of him trying to figure it out and being a weirdo, not necessarily his.
Well, it's him trying to replace
his
the only thing he loved in his life. So he's trying to find that.
Yeah,
it was barely even made. Coherent that was what it was.
And so that's why
it
really
came across. I think it came across. I can't. They had those
right.
They're
all saying it doesn't.
It unfolds.
Though,
it unfolds slowly.
Added on. If it was in there,
it
wouldn't
like
have felt added
how
on.
How it was forced at the end. The stuff on the end was kind of forced, but I feel like it was unnatural. Like you kind of you see those flashbacks where like you find out that. That's why he named the machine Michael or
Christopher.
So why does it seem forced then at the end?
No,
if it's built
the
around
message
that
they
love.
Try to push at the end.
Because it wasn't about his story anymore. It was about all of these other ones. And that was like, that's not what...
But he didn't kill himself because of computers.
I know,
no,
but
he killed himself because
that
he was...
diminishes the story itself.
I felt like it diminished the whole story.
Because you're making it about something that's actually, you know, it's more personal, but they're trying to make
it
a broader...
Yeah, exactly. You're taking that personal
element. Sort of... walked with through the whole movie, like you became.
But that's like
to
taking the ALS out of Still Alice. Honestly, that's what it feels like. Ella trying to do like
no.
Because
we're not
you've
doing that
got
at all.
A good feedback on one element, take out the rest. Whereas if you take out the main cork of what this story is really about and what it's getting at, like the fact that he did all this during the war is amazing. But the fact what happened to him. Really is heartbreaking. That's the heartbreak of the story. That was why the heartbreak of his speech was so amazing. The book part of it is gets to the whole picture. The film doesn't capture it. I think Whiplash at least gives us the full picture of what Damien wanted to do. I think it's a complete script compared to the book and compared to what you're doing. I think this takes away, because it is added on, it doesn't complete it in the movie. But that's not the book. Just like Inherent Vice misses everything that's in Thomas's book, it doesn't capture any of the quirkiness. That makes it not a great adapted screenplay. I think Imitation Game doesn't deserve an Oscar. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, wow. Guys, I think I might have just been swayed. I was like, yeah, you're saying all the things I'm trying to say.
Like, I appreciate the movie, I appreciate elements of the movie, but y'all are disliking the one element I thought should have been in the entire damn movie. Because then you do have that amazing story of how sad is it that this is how he died? They pushed him to the brink of suicide because of his sexuality. He fucking won the war.
Yeah.
He should
that
be
was
a
there,
hero.
That came across to me. I don't know if it came across to
you. Have y'all ever heard of Alan before that? No. I never heard of him in my life. The dude should be as well known as Einstein. He created computers, for God's sakes. We don't even remember the motherfucker. All we remember is him and Keira Knightley are cute. And that's kind of where I think the movie...
You got something completely different because I didn't see that at all.
I only got that after the movie.
No,
I enjoyed the movie as much as y'all.
I felt his struggle through the whole movie, and I felt all that because I you could see, he was Benedict Cumberbatch was great in that movie, and I don't know.
But it's a weirdo.
But I couldn't.
It's a weirdo.
Well, that's the character that he was playing, and he had a lot of internal struggle, and I think they did a great job sort of expressing where that struggle was coming from. And there was some great monologues between him and Keira Knightley, and just him and just.
So why do you think it's added on the gayness?
Not the gayness, just the message, the broader message I felt was forced.
Was 30,000 gays were killed by the Nazis, which is not at all addressed
in
the film. That was my title card. I had.
I don't care about.
Hey guys, anytime they do a Jewish film, 6 million Jews died at the end. It's kind of fucking got to be put there. It's not something that.
So that's what I think,
over.
But I feel like, you know, his personal message, the personal story of Alan Turing does come across, and I do feel the
struggle. They should have geared it up a little bit more in the movie.
I thought so. I thought they should have really...
Well,
you know what?
They
should have
because
seen
they had to hide that. That was a big part of it, too, is they had to hide, because once you were found out to be gay, your career was... Everything was over.
But they only gave us a couple of scenes where that happens. We get a broken-up apartment at the very beginning. We get him talking to the officers, and none of that gets resolved.
Yeah.
None of it gets resolved. That's his end. Those fuckers put him in jail and caused him to have to take drugs.
Yeah.
Like, that's the end of his life. That shit. That should have been in the film. It's not.
Yeah.
And I bet you Cumberbatch role-wise, he must have felt it, but you don't feel that. He's not best actor. Because if he'd shown that, I think he's, you know, he's a lot better than Michael Keaton. Which all Michael was, I'm just showing Raymond Carver, sad. Oh, I'm sad old man. Got a daughter's a whore. Like, compared to what Cumberbatch could have done, I'm grateful he didn't win for that. And I'm grateful this movie didn't get as much love. Because as far as the story was good and all, but even there were better war films like Fury, in my opinion, than this. Like, this film is getting a lot more hype.
This was, you're looking at a completely different, it's not a war film. It was about a man with his internal struggle of who he was and trying to find some sort of outlet to express himself. And it was through his work. It was the only way that he could find a way to be who he really was.
And who was he really? Because we don't know. And the movie didn't show
that.
We
don't know.
You do know.
So, okay.
He was a closeted gay man that his only true love.
You found that in 2014, not 19.
I'm trying to wrap you guys up, guys.
Yeah. So, but we can talk about this all day. But Brian, what else we got? Yeah.
Let's move on. All right. Director, Birdman, Alejandro, what do you think?
Who said this?
That was great.
We're good? We're good here? Linklater. Should have gotten it?
I say Linklater.
I'm not against Alejandro. He's a great director. He's a good dude. Boyhood 4 is worthy of him.
I'm on Andrew's train on this one. But he had to do a lot of orchestrating to make all the things happen.
Texas guy one.
It would have been cool for the Whiplash director to get another nomination, though, too, since his whole
second time director.
Is it second?
Second film, yeah.
Let's move on to Best Actor, which I was completely pissed off by the nomination. Bradley Cooper should have never been nominated.
Oh my god, I totally disagree.
I think
Bradley Cooper should have.
Ray Fiennes
should have been in there.
How about Cumberbatch and Cooper getting kicked out for both those characters?
Cumberbatch
should have gotten
very worthy
out.
Of his nomination.
Yeah.
Who was it? I think Steve Carell could have been bumped.
Yeah.
That would have been
supporting.
Great.
Supporting.
Should have been supporting. Yeah.
Should have been supporting.
It's. I mean, I don't think Eddie Redmayne should have won. It should have gone to Keaton.
You're blind. You're blind.
The problem is they love transformation stories that the Oscars do. You know, that's why Tom Hanks won for all of Philadelphia and Forrest Gump. Like, they like the transition that Eddie Redmayne made throughout the movie. It was a very hard performance to pull off and to be believable. Because, like, it could have easily turned into
a caricature.
An over-the-top, like, that you would just despise watching. But I think,
But I want to go back. How do you think Bradley Cooper deserved it?
I
did not see it at all.
I did not care for that film. That film made me very angry. It's taken me a few months to be able to calm myself down enough to have a polite conversation about it. But I always come back to the performances in it. And Bradley Cooper's performance in this, there's scenes in that that still resonate with me, especially the one where he's with his son at the garage getting his tires fixed and Jonathan Groff comes up to him and Jonathan Groff is just expressing how wonderful he is and how amazing he's been and how much he appreciates everything he does. And Bradley, he loses himself. He becomes Chris Kyle and he's just a series of grunts. And like the fact that he could do this performance and just lose himself so completely and just make such an impression with just like, I found that impressive. I found that to be something that I was like, holy shit, you're making me so angry because I'm believing you are this character of this man that, everybody thinks is this amazing hero, but I kind of look at and go, well, you killed 150 people.
Like anybody could have played that part.
No, I don't think so.
Brian, he's playing a cold-blooded killer who has no emotion. It's a very difficult role. We've only seen a few people pull it off. Anthony Hopkins pulled it off, too.
Oh, and I was going to say...
But that's a diss, because this is a lot better than Terminator.
What's the name of that movie? What did, the Spanish guy that won...
Oh, Javier Bardem.
Javier Bardem for,
as a villain character, Bradley Cooper's a diabolical villain in this movie.
I would venture to say he is a villain in that movie.
That's why he...
Exactly.
He has just a lot of jingoism.
He's the best part of the movie.
Because he did the same exact thing. He became completely opposite of who he was. And that's why I think they wanted to award him that, because it took a lot for him to become that character.
I think Jake Gyllenhaal...
I agree.
Jake Gyllenhaal should have been in there.
Won wholeheartedly over Eddie. But, Eddie's better than Bradley Cooper, I think. slightly, but really? I don't.
See, I would have given it to Bradley Cooper over Eddie, honestly.
I don't know. I like Bradley Cooper, but Eddie physically turned into Stephen Hawking. It's pretty incredible. No one's had that turn from.
I do feel bad for Michael Keaton, though, because he's 63, his first nomination, and it was probably one of the strongest performances he'll ever
have. And I don't think he'll ever.
And I don't really know if he'll get to that point ever again.
Beetlejuice is pretty damn good, y'all. Maybe it's better.
Maybe he'll rob him of an Oscar.
Maybe he'll.
I think Beetlejuice 2's coming out, so maybe.
Part 2, yeah.
Get an Oscar.
I feel like he's going to have, like, a resurgence. Maybe he'll be on television. Maybe he'll sue True Detective Season 3, guys. I'll be down for that.
Hopefully they'll do another guy spinoff as the captain.
Right, let's do actress. Julianne Moore is Dallas.
Yeah. How many of y'all saw?
It's another one.
I saw it, and it was amazing.
She didn't see it, but the other, there weren't that many strong performances, unfortunately. Mm-hmm.
They like their Alzheimer's pictures.
Rosamund Pike
was awesome.
Reese was good, too.
I thought Reese and Wild was good. Pretty strong. But, you know,
Rosamund Pike was amazing. I would have hated her.
You definitely hate Rosamund Pike after watching Gone. She did a great job.
Did you watch Soil?
I haven't seen it. But
it was like one of those years where, like,
I'm in the camp where
they're awarding her for past.
I was going to say, I'm in the camp of, thank God, Julianne Moore deserves an Oscar. She deserved Oscars many, many years ago. Let her have her fucking Oscar.
But
and it was a great performance. And it was an amazing performance. Yeah. It wasn't like when...
Like Michael Keaton, I think.
It wasn't like when Russell Crowe... Didn't he win for The Gladiator?
No, he got snubbed
for The Gladiator.
And he gave one for Beautiful Mind.
Yeah, which I...
He went for both.
No, he didn't win for both. He got snubbed.
He won for Gladiator.
He got snubbed on Gladiator.
No, Joaquin Phoenix won for Gladiator.
Joaquin
won for Gladiator.
He got snubbed and then they gave it to him for Beautiful Mind. That was like one of the things.
No,
like, with,
they didn't give Russell Crowe Beautiful Mind.
Yeah.
No, Denzel Washington won.
No, look.
For Training Day.
Much better.
That was the snub.
Training Day.
Because they turned the camera to Russell Crowe and he had this pissed off look on his face.
So it won over Gladiator.
And you know what?
He won it for Beautiful Mind. Because I know that was the biggest thing. Like, people were like, he should have won for Gladiator, but he won for Beautiful Mind.
No, I don't think he won for either.
Pull out your pocket computers, guys.
Yeah. All
right. I'll tell you right now.
He's overrated.
Well, all right. Julianne Moore should have won for Jurassic Park Lost World, guys.
Best picture?
Winner.
I mean,
for Gladiator, nominee for Beautiful Mind, because Denzel Washington won that year, and he was pissed off.
I feel like Susan
Kong job in your face.
I feel like Susan should be our new Oscar historian.
I'm just saying, I'll never forget that face, because they turned the camera to him, and he didn't do a gracious loser face. He had his hand over his mouth, and maddest look I've ever seen on a, like, he didn't even fake it. And I was shocked, because I thought Russell Crowe would win for Beautiful Mind.
All right, so.
He didn't. Because Training Day won.
All right, Best Picture, Birdman, yes?
Sure, fine, whatever.
I would have liked Whiplash to win.
It was my second
Maybe
favorite movie of the year.
Whiplash to win.
Or
Grand Budapest.
Yeah.
I wanted that was my favorite movie. For Wes. I mean,
but I was also, I also so really, fun. And I really expected Boyhood to win. I don't know why.
Right. I really did.
I really expected, and I know. Jesus.
Is that Linkletter? Call again? Say hi. Ask him hello.
That's why we don't do remotes, guys.
Sorry.
It's Paddington Bear. He wants his hat back.
He's like, I want to go back to Peru.
Where am I?
I turned the stupid thing off, but it...
Obviously you did.
Obviously you did.
That's when I would just unplug it.
Okay, everybody now, and go.
Okay. So that's our Oscar talk. We ended on Birdman. Go for it. We all wanted either Whiplash or Grand Budapest to win, but...
I think that it was a fine. I mean, it's a good movie. I feel like last year, 2015, had a lot of really great technical films. Just, like, really innovative, very exciting, like, with Boyhood and with Birdman and even with the terribleness that was Interstellar. Like, they're very innovative. And so, and Whiplash is another one that really brings you back to, like, an intimate story between just two characters. And I think that it was a good grouping of films for the Best Picture.
It was an okay year, but
it was an okay year, but it was
fun. Yeah.
All right.
No upsets, nothing surprising, really.
It was okay. I hope next year
everything is awesome.
That would have been awesome if Everything is Awesome had won.
Oh, yeah, after that Glory performance, how weird would that have been?
That would have been awesome.
So awkward. And what? Then the winner?
What's Common's real name? Like, Lonnie?
They both have weird names, yeah. Both John Legend and con and a common.
All right, so to wrap the pot, this 55th podcast up.
Because we're almost as old as me.
It's true, almost. It's about 10 years.
You could go to the Marigold Hotel.
Yes, yes. That means I'll hook up with Richard Gere.
So,
we've been competition with
Old Indian lady.
We've been doing a segment where we talk of where we recast. We've done a lot of recasts before. We're not going to really recast this a little bit. But we'll
what
talk
we
about a movie
about?
That came out. There's not a
thought
lot of movies that came out over the past several years over this particular weekend. But I picked one that you probably haven't seen before, but bear with me here. It's a really cool concept. Back on March 2nd, which is this coming weekend, in 2001, a movie called Series 7 came out. I don't know if any of you have heard of it. It's called
Series
7.
Why? I've actually seen it, but, like, why?
What is Series 7?
Okay, Series 7 is a
take
really
me on this trip, John Lovitz.
I will.
Movie no one knows.
There's a chance
this obscure movie that you're about to pull out of your butt.
It's a really...
In a random year. Too.
It's a really... Well, because I checked all, like, the 15, 20 years, and this one...
This is the only one that he's heard of.
I'm telling you, there
Brian
really
always
wasn't.
Does this. That's just funny.
But Series 7, it was really... It's a really cool movie. I highly recommend it. So, basically...
Is this the one, the reality show?
Yes.
Okay, I've seen this movie.
It is awesome. This director, basically, he pitched a reality show to the networks, basically, where you take people, you give them a gun, and you tell them they have the confines of the city and they have to kill each other. And the studio exec for the reality show said, can you make it more sexy and less violent? And so he made this movie where a lottery picks six people. You each get a handgun and you have to kill them within a certain time. And it's badass.
It's like Hunger Games meets The Bachelor, kind of, right?
There's no marriage. It's just kind of like just regular people. You know, you can meet them at a shopping mall to have a
so it's more like Big Brother.
It's really cool. So I'm thinking as far as...
Please don't make us recast this. I don't know anybody that's in this movie.
No, I'm not. Like, I'm just saying, like, what six people would you want to see in this type of movie?
Oh, cool. All
like,
right. What six people would I want to see in a movie killing each other?
Yeah.
All right, cool. I got that.
We already have, like, The Hunger Games, so...
Dan Stevens, if he's shirtless.
We should all pick one.
Maggie Smith.
Okay.
We should all pick one.
Because there's six of us, right? So we should all pick one.
So I just want to say that...
And see what we get up with.
The original main person in the original was Brooke Smith. She was the chick from Silence of the Lambs who Buffalo Bill kidnapped.
Series 7? What is this called?
It's called Series 7.
I like Dev Patel in this.
Okay, give me the archetypes of... I can't remember what are the archetypes of all the...
I mean, you don't have to do archetypes. They're really... That's what was so cool about it. They didn't do, like, the crazy black guy or the nerdy white guy.
It really
does
sound like Hunger Games.
But, I mean, it's kind of similar to Battle Royale, but it's just a... It's in a day where, like, anything on reality TV sells.
Okay, so I would
so
want it to
everybody
be,
should pick one person.
Everyone should
want...
And then... And a style. Like,
because
I'm when it, like a directing style. Because I, whenever I think of Series 7, I always think of like 90s, cyberpunk sort of films. Like, that one with the glass, not Quantum Leap. What is the movie with Ralph Fiennes in it that was?
I love it, Strange Days.
Strange Days. That kind of, and like Johnny
Mnemonic,
like that sort
yeah.
of, okay. that sort of glossy, very cyberpunk look.
Okay, so
if my cyberpunk version of this.
Dan Stevens. Cyberpunk.
I would want to have. Yeah. Who would I want to have killed?
Dolph Lundgren.
Who do you want to kill? Girl you hate with a passion?
Oh, yeah, Gabby Hoffman.
Gabby
Hoffman.
Star.
Gabby Hoffman.
Sold. These are all people we're really going to kill, right?
Well, this is the person who's going to be. Well, I mean, obviously, I don't think Gabby Hoffman will make it till the end, but you
cool.
want
Gabby
Hoffman.
I want Gabby Hoffman in my.
I nominate Kristen Stewart also.
Kristen Stewart's in.
Yeah.
So Kristen Stewart from Adam. And Gabby Hoffman.
From My Worst Nightmares.
All right. Who else is ready?
We'll have two, but I'm trying to think of who qualifies as an actor. Is Justin Bieber qualified?
Sure.
No,
he's been on a TV show.
He's terrible.
I know. So it'd be really awesome to see him die.
It would just
get roasted.
He'd be a fun cameo. Like, we could just kill him as, like, a side
head explosion in the background.
I'm really an actor that I really hate.
I'm going to pick Sean Connery coming out of retirement.
Old Sean Connery?
I want, huh?
Old Sean, like current day Sean Connery?
Yeah, current day Sean Connery. I want like the person in...
He's not doing well.
The Sean Connery that we're not allowed to see.
Right, I want him in this movie because I want an older person in this movie to take out the youngsters.
Okay, so we've got Kristen Stewart, Gabby Hoffman, and Sean Connery in this movie.
I'm going to switch up the theme from cyberpunk to Bob Fosse musical. And it's going to co-star... Like
Roy Schneider?
Gene Hackman coming out of his retirement.
Oh my god. He's also.
Battle with Sean Connery, killing. Who's the better killer?
Okay.
That would be cool if they were friends.
Best friends.
Yeah.
But not
who's
anymore.
The cooler killer, though?
Yeah. Former best friends. Yeah. They have a vengeance, they have a grudge. All right, Andrew, you look so happy.
Kevin Hart?
Josh Ames, by the way.
I am going to throw in John Travolta's toupee.
Oh.
It's just his toupee. Now we can throw
John Travolta. Him as
Powder, sure.
Be great.
Isn't he?
No.
Not like
that's so much of fun.
But him as Powder, like
I was
if he became Powder.
Why would he?
No. Get what I'm saying here.
Like the character. Okay.
You know, creepy John Travolta from the Oscars. That's played.
But as
he
Powder,
also, like go into lightning and
yeah. No, he's got white skin.
Oh my god!
And he's like super.
Jeff Goldblum back. Because what's he doing?
He's super.
All right, Susan, hit us up. Let us go home.
Sub question, really. Film characters from the Oscars. Would it be cool to have? Jake Gyllenhaal from Nightcrawler's character be in this thing?
Talking about Nightcrawler, nothing happened in that movie.
Right.
That movie was constantly building to something happening, and nothing did.
Which is why it's just a performance.
Thank you.
What?
There needed to be something cool. There was nothing.
It's like Michael Clayton.
He was not that evil. What did he get away with? He got away with shit.
Dude, he, like, was responsible for killing people.
He wasn't responsible.
We only see him technically kill 1.5 people. 1.5. Because we don't know if the guy
he
jumped.
He killed Rene Russo's soul.
He did.
I thought they were going to totally bone.
That was all. He did.
They did.
I totally slept through that part.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, she slept on that.
And her bad
face. Right, so
I picked
her
Tyler
bad face.
Like
yeah, let's go Tyler Perry.
Medea?
As Medea.
As Medea.
It's a Medea
just
story.
Like the people in
the Medea is here.
Did we just do our very own post apocalyptic film? Like the scary movie sort of franchise
Medea
thing?
Medea Series 7.
Are the Wayne brothers in this?
It's just a bunch of white people in Medea.
Medea.
She probably ends up killing everybody.
I know. Medea for the win.
I don't know.
That was fun.
Sign that.
Okay, yeah. So we've got Kristen Stewart, Gene Hackman,
she has to die first,
Gabby Hoffman, John Travolta,
Sean Connery,
and Tyler Perry.
It's a movie.
Harrison
no one's
Ford,
gonna watch.
Can he come in?
No one's gonna watch this movie. I'm sorry.
Guys, I don't think we have a chance making this movie.
I think
we'll probably make more than the original because
watch
no one's seen the original.
Just to see how bad it is.
They just need to sell 2 tickets. We can just screen it here at the Angelica.
We'd say it's like the best Marigold Hotel for men. It's a bunch of old dudes.
It's set in the hotel. That's where they gotta kill each other.
Oh, it's like it's like the new season of
it's like Clue.
American Horror Story
like
hotel.
Hotel.
So anticlimactic,
like
right?
Clue.
Hotels are scary, guys. I stay in a lot of them.
Which one?
The hotels.
The Shining.
Yeah.
Hotels are hotels.
Have you really stayed at the what?
No, I'm saying American Horror Story Hotel, even though it's an anticlimactic name, I'm like, I will be terrified because hotels are scary to me.
Is that chill kind of going?
I didn't finish
What's
this
the
last season.
What's the John Cusack one, 1406?
Nobody did.
1408.
The Dolphin Inn? Yeah.
Well, let's end. That's podcast number
55. That was a great podcast.
Thanks for having us at the Angelica.
You're welcome.
Live at the Angelica.
Wow, that's an endorsement.